7 minutes past six, slow and welcome to Sports Day. Happy Friday, everyone. The cricket is on. Did you know? Did you forget? Australia are toying with India, if you didn't. They're 3 for 294 in the 43rd over. Steve Smith and the Big Show, Glenn Maxwell, are at the crease. We're here for Red Energy, born and bred in Melbourne. That is Red Energy. And for Kia, the all-new Kia Sorento has landed. Darren Lehman, the former Australian coach and current coach of the Brisbane Heat, is going to join us shortly to talk all things Australia versus India. Shane McGuinness, welcome to you.
Evening to you, Sammy. Good to see you. Good to see cricket back as well. And I've got to admit,
it was on free to air.
Yes.
I forgot it was on today.
Well, I think the fact that
it's my job,
not on free to air, has somewhat diminished the publicity of the game.
Somewhat.
Significantly. And if you're not an avid Fox Sports watcher, it's certainly been pumped up on Fox. But yeah, fair to say, not on the free to air partner in the Seven Network. And why would they pump up a product that's not theirs? I tell you what I am loving seeing at the moment, other than Glenn Maxwell smacking the Indians all over the field at the moment as he takes another six.
Just been dropped on the boundary, by
indeed.
The way. Would have been the catch of the century if he'd taken it.
The fans back at the SCG, 50% capacity
it is
today. I could think of nothing sweeter than being in the stands with a nice Carlton draft this afternoon. It'd be a very nice way, especially watching the Aussies strut their stuff at the moment.
So, Shane, explain this to me. I forgot that when Seven took over the cricket from Nine, that they didn't buy the ODIs and the international T20s.
Correct. So, Fox Sports has the rights to all the summer of cricket. That includes the BBL, the WBBL, the Test One Days and international T20s. The Seven Network, they have all the Test matches. They have the majority of Big Bash matches, but they do not have the rights to the One Days and T20s. And that's been the way for the last couple of years.
So I just feel like I'm not trying to compare this to the footy because I know they're completely different and one's international and one's not. I get that. But, you know, any time that it's ever talked about football being streamed on Amazon or Netflix, or it's like, no, well, you need to have all the games on free to air. You know, well, you need to have at least every day there's footy on. You need to have some games on free to air, which I understand. You know, anti-siphoning laws the way that they are, albeit a little arbitrary, it stands its place in society, and I get that. Why is it not the same for the cricket? So for me, what this has done is completely diluted the value of one-day international cricket. Because if it's not on free-to-air, what you're saying to everyone is, it's a niche thing.
So West Coast versus Fremantle is a niche thing. North Melbourne versus Port Adelaide on a Saturday afternoon is a niche thing.
But in all due respect, I mean, they are in that they get significantly less fans.
To be honest, I understand.
Would it rate badly?
The one-day internationals?
Yeah, if it was on Channel 7 afternoon or on 7-2.
But Fox Sports has paid more for the cricket.
Yeah,
and therefore, just as they did for the footy, they have to get something to give them a one-up on Channel 7. And that's what the one-day internationals do. And I have no doubt 7 would have thought, all right, well, we're willing to sacrifice the one-day internationals and the T20 internationals. I'd love to hear from our audience on this on the Hard Horse.
Yeah, did you miss
it? 13-13-32. But at the end of the day, Fox Sports is willing to pay the hundreds of millions of dollars that they did. They have to get bang for their buck. And the one-day internationals and the T20s is exactly that.
Changing tact a little bit, Chano. Anthony Colangelo and Sam Phillips in The Age and Sydney Morning Herald have just broken a story saying that players have secured a permission, tennis players that is, to practice during their 14-day quarantine.
That's big.
The story goes on to say with the first Grand Slam of the year most likely to begin a couple of weeks late on February 1, players will be able to arrive in Australia at the end of the first week of 2021 and train while separated from the community. So, I mean, for those of you who are wondering why this is so significant, this has been the big sticking point, is that if players came to Melbourne and had to spend 14 days isolating in a hotel room where they weren't able to train or play, well then, how long would they need to then get up to the standard of being able to play in a Grand Slam? If they were allowed to train in a bubble like the AFL and NRL players were doing, then they'd be able to go. Glenn Maxwell has just hit a ball almost into the second tier of the SCG. He is going absolutely berserk. He is 33 from 12 balls now. Steve Smith going pretty well at 74 from 49 balls. Marcus Stoinis, for those of you who hadn't caught up, Aaron Finch made his 17th one-day international century. By the way, going past the great Adam Gilchrist, Shane.
With 16.
With 16. So that is some fair effort. His one-day international career is just flourishing as the years go on. Marcus Stoinis came in, as can happen when you have a big opening stand and you're two for a couple of hundred. Stoinis came in and was out first ball. They then sent in the big show ahead of Labuschagne. Australia 3 for 309 in the 44th over. Steve Smith in the break, by the way, Shane, did tell Fox Sports that he wanted to make 370.
Well, they're certainly on their way with Glenn Maxwell performing as he is at the moment. Interesting what you say about...
Sorry, back to the tennis.
No, yeah. And we'll keep an eye on the cricket as well. But the practice is pivotal for the players, because what this means now is that there is still the chance the Australian Open starts on the 25th of January. It comes down now as to whether or not qualifying will be part of this summer of the Australian Open.
Yep.
If there is no qualifying, the Australian Open starts on the 25th of January. If there is qualifying, it'll start on the 1st of February. What was fascinating this morning on 3AW, Sam, was the number of callers Neil Mitchell had saying, cancel the Australian Open. We do not want these players here. I would love to hear from our listeners, and probably more of a sporting audience, it's fair to say. 13, 13, 32. Are you happy with the Australian Open to go ahead? Are you happy for these players to train? Because as you just said, Sammy, no training, they're not going to come to Australia. They're not going to sit and do their 14-day quarantine and then a few days later step out into the Grand Slam and do five-set matches.
Couple of copies of The Golf Course Guide.
Well, that's a good book.
Yeah. It's put together by Golf Australia. It is Australia's number one golfing directory. You can actually, there's a list of every public golf course in the country. It's the golfing Bible. And you can also save on green fees. There's great deals at every club. 13, 13, 32 if you want to be part of the show. By the way, just a quick reminder, a day of extreme fire danger has been forecast tomorrow across Victoria's Mallee District. Heat health alert has also been issued for the Mallee. Monitor conditions at emergency.vic.gov.au. So there you go. Aaron Finch, 114. Dave Warner, 69. Controversial that he was eventually given out. Steve Smith and Glenn Maxwell now going on at a lovely pace. Australia, 3 for 309 at the end of the 44th over. This is Sports Day. The all-new Kia Sorento has landed, and we are powered by Ren Energy. You can make the switch today. Darren Lehman, not far away. Darren Lehman about to join us. Joe's in East Melbourne. G'day, Joe.
Hello.
Joe, go ahead, mate. You're on air.
Oh, g'day. How are you?
We're good.
That's good. About the tennis players and obviously not being subjected to quarantine. I think a lot of us have made sacrifices.
No, they are being subjected to quarantine. Joe, just before you go on, they are being subjected to quarantine. They're just allowed to practice whilst they're in quarantine.
Correct. We understand that. But I mean, quite obviously they're going to be shifting out of their confined space to go and practice tennis. And the issue will be whether they're actually going to be exposed to other individuals, the general community. And the true test will be if we get through this and there's no risk of infection to anyone else. And I think, you know, they're getting paid money. And if they can't sit there for 14 days and quarantine, be in total quarantine as everyone else does, and in view of the fact that international travel's effectively been banned until there's a vaccine, I think we're making an exception purely on the basis of commerce rather than on the basis of true public health, public health message.
Thanks, Joe, for your call. I think professional athletes should be given special dispensation, given what is happening and given that we are now, as of today, according to epidemiologically research, we have eliminated the virus. We'll get back to that because I want to get to the cricket. Australia 3 for 324. Glenn Maxwell, well, he was 41 from 17. He's just done the ramp. He's now 45 from 18. Darren Lehman knows exactly how destructive Glenn Maxwell can be when he gets in these sort of moods. Hello, Darren.
Afternoon, boys. It's been a pretty impressive performance with the bat first game of summer holidays, hasn't it?
Goodness gracious me. Is it, Darren, how much of this do you look at as a coach and think you need to see the first 10 overs of how India bat first just to see, you know, what the deck is actually like for batting? Because it looks pretty good at the moment.
Oh, it'd be good, mate. I mean, they're not making good fitness. They've got some world-class players, India.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll have to get early wickets. And that's still the key in one-day cricket. You've got to get early wickets. If you do that, then you're a chance to chase, obviously you can restrict them. India, if they don't lose early wickets, they're a chance to chase it down because there's such a quality batting lineup. So The difference in the game will be the opening partnership of Warner and Finch at the start, where they didn't lose any wickets, that big over-century partnership, and you know that got the ball rolling. And Steve Smith came in and went straight from the get-go. He's obviously got his hands going, and he's got them right.
There's great confidence in this group at the moment, Boof, as we see Glenn Maxwell with a straight drive caught in the deep by Jadeja out for 45. But just to think that they haven't played cricket for so long, especially cricket on home soil, in so long, and the form that this batting lineup is showing, gee, it bodes well for the summer ahead.
It does, but that's the same for both sides, isn't it? I mean, no one's played much cricket at all, have they, in the last, obviously, 6 to 8 months. So, you know, it's a good start from the Aussies. They'll be really ecstatic about it, especially their top order getting the runs. That's what they'd want. If you're doing that, you're making a lot of runs all the time. I know Aaron Finch, you know, his captain's really proud of his sort of top three getting the job done a lot of the time. If they do that, I know Jay will be happy and they'll be very ecstatic. So it's a polished performance, and Maxwell coming in at the end there just to give it a real bump up. And then it's over to the bowlers.
It's interesting. We were just talking about, obviously, the tennis and the quarantine. India has just completed its 2 weeks of quarantine. They were allowed to practice. But still, being in that quarantine situation, Boof, it would take a little bit out of you, the fact that normality seems to go out the window.
It does, but that's the world we live in at the moment, isn't it? You just got to put up with that and get on with it the best you possibly can. And you know, that's everyone. It's every individual and team. So, you know, we had Brisbane Heat boys. We just had Chris Lynn come out of quarantine today from the IPL. So, you know, it's been the case for everyone. It's a weird year, 2020, and we just want everyone to stay safe and healthy as can be. So, yeah, you've got to adapt as a player and coaches. And you know, it's going to be a little bit different summer as such, but it's still going to be an exciting one.
Have you had to quarantine this year?
I did when I came back from Adelaide, yeah, because the outbreak in Adelaide. So, we had that. So, but it was the self quarantine where it's in at home, so it's a little bit different than the international travel. So, I've been a little bit lucky. I haven't wanted to travel, obviously, with the heart attack in February. So, I've stayed at home, lads, to be fair. So, I know it's been tough on the guys with the quarantine in small hotel rooms as such, but, you know, safety and health is most important.
How would you view Cam Green in trying to get him into the team this summer, Darren? Like, has he done enough domestically?
Yeah, he'll play somewhere. They'll get him in the one-day setup like that 3 years ago, really. You know, I think that's happened throughout everyone's career where you've got a game here and there through one-day scenarios. If Australia play well and win the series, you can try and get a game there into him, and you just got to get him into that sort of fixture somewhere. And look, with his bowling, where it comes into calculations, it'd be somewhere like, you know, Sydney, where you might play two spinners, you want the extra all-rounder sort of setup, a bit like they've done with Mitchell Marsh a couple of times. So, you know, that's how they'll look at it. But, you know, who's he going to replace out of the top six? You've got Bukowski, you know, they're pushing him. Obviously, he's had a great start of the summer, but I think they'll be pretty traditional, the Aussies. They'll play six batters, playing at seven in the four bowls.
Boof, curious to get your thoughts. We heard Ian Chappell in his media rounds during the week saying that he was surprised that David Warner would even be asked about who he'd like to open with. As a coach, do you sound out the openers and the players as to who they want to partner up with and what the batting lineup might look like? Of course, this comes back to whether or not it's Joe Burns or Will Pekowski at the top of the order.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? I mean, everyone's entitled to their opinion, aren't they? In his day, you know, I'm sure he would have been asked about sides as captain, etc. So, you know, David Warner just has his opinion. I have no dramas either way. I mean, communication is one of the keys. I mean, at the end of the day, select the side anyway, don't they? So it doesn't matter who they speak to. At the end of the day, they've got to select the side, and, you know, it'll be what it'll be. So it's no dramas whichever way they go.
And we know as well as anyone that the selectors are going to have to take it from the media, come rain, hail or shine.
Yeah, they do. So that was one of the things when you're a coach and selector, you cop it either way. Yeah. So there's no point worrying about it. It's part and parcel of the job. So I know Jay won't worry about it. I know Trevor Holmes, he's pretty thick-skinned. You know, everyone's entitled to their opinion, aren't they? And that's the great thing about our sport. Everyone has an opinion.
Who's going to be the team to beat in BBL 10?
Hopefully the Brisbane Heat. Hopefully the Saints, yeah.
I already penciled you in for the grand final. I just wonder who your opponent's going to be.
Yeah, well, let's see how we go. I mean, the WBBL's been quite exciting. I'm looking forward to the final on Saturday. So that's been good. And hopefully we kick on to a great tournament throughout, obviously, the BBL 10 for everyone. So, you know, we've got a young squad, which is nice and exciting. We've got some, you know, superstars that are going to be, you know, I think they're going to be future international absolute superstars in our setup. So once they get here and play and with our local guys, I think we'll be pretty good.
Hey, Buff, just before I let you go, you mentioned the heart attack just a moment ago, the day before your 50th birthday. How are you feeling? And you've started a campaign called My Marathon and all about getting healthy and feeling better. How are you feeling? And are you hoping to inspire a few others about getting their healthy lifestyle so they don't have to go through what you did?
Yeah, trying to, mate, as best you possibly can. I mean, it is Friday afternoon, so I'm probably going to have a beer. I'm not too worried about that. But
it's all about moderation.
It's all about moderation. But, obviously, it was on my 50th birthday, so it's just a wake-up call. And, you know, I had some great people behind me, and the Heart Foundation was fantastic. So just to raise some awareness, really, for everyone to get out there and get healthy and really look after themselves and get their heart checked and make sure they're ticking along okay.
What is the beer of choice, Buff?
Oh, it's West End Draft if I'm in town, or it's 4X Gold. So there you go.
Darren, thanks for joining us.
You can pay the boy out of SA.
No,
but
I have a picture of you sitting on the couch with the cricket on, and a cold one is just about to be cracked open. So thanks for coming on and giving us some of your Friday.
Thanks, boys.
Darren Lehman there, former Australian national coach, of course, and still coaching the Brisbane Heat. All the best to him. His health as well, as he obviously went through a pretty serious battle, but has come through the other side, which is the most important thing.
Yeah, he's an absolute ripper. I got to say, Sam, there was an incident that surprised me earlier in the day. It was just in the seventh over, a protester came onto the ground. It was a Stop Adani protester. It has no place at the cricket, especially when you are interrupting play. He went onto the field of play, went to the middle of the venue.
Right.
It took at least 4 minutes for security,
it's a long time,
to come and escort him. He wasn't tackled. He was kindly escorted, and the security guards were in no rush whatsoever. I was just bewildered by it.
Well, he shouldn't be tackled anyway.
Well, you think about it. If you've had a few cans at the footy and you run onto the ground, you are going to be tackled and escorted.
Yeah, but that's because those peanuts are running around it's like they're trying to be caught.
But in this day and age, Sam, no one should be entering that arena.
No.
And if you do, you should be off within 30 seconds.
I agree with that, but they don't need to be tackled to the ground.
Yeah.
No, they don't. I don't believe in any sort of violence like that. Well,
it's
no,
not
but
violent.
Tackling the ground is violence.
Get off the arena.
Yeah, fine. You don't need to be tackled.
Get off the arena.
I understand, but you don't need to be tackled.
We're going to agree to disagree on this one.
We'll make Aaron Finch's ton. He's 17th, by the way. We'll make that the Furphy unbelievable moment of the week. Wow, we are. So, 117 balls it took him. He goes into fourth on the list of Australian ODI centuries. Goes past Gilchrist. Ponting has 29. Warner has 18. Mark Waugh has 18. They are all ahead of him. That is some list.
Oh, absolutely. And
Ponting
has
11 more than the next best.
He was in fine form.
Introducing the new easy drinking beer from Furphy. It is the first Furphy Crisp Lager, brewed for the ultimate refreshment. We'll be right back on Sports Day. Ty Power Sports Update. Jared Hayne has been recorded via police phone taps saying he would sue the woman accusing him of sexual assault for defamation. The police taps recorded Haynes saying this to former New South Wales Origin teammate Mitchell Pearce. That is not a good story in any sense of it. Bad news there for Jared Hayne and, well, for everyone involved, to be honest. It's just a nasty story and it continues to get worse. In the NFL, Shane, the Baltimore Ravens star quarterback and reigning NFL MVP, Lamar Jackson, has tested positive for COVID-19. He's one of four Ravens players to test positive. Their game against Pittsburgh, which was going to be played today, has now been postponed until Monday morning our time.
That just summarises America at the moment in one headline. The fact that the game was scheduled for today and has been postponed 48 hours.
Yeah.
If that was the AFL.
Yeah, but.
That's why I say. I mean, it's just so rife in America at the moment that.
Yeah, but we're also.
Six players. Oh, well.
Yeah.
We'll just.
We're also very different, though. You know, like, I do get a bit frustrated when people compare us to Europe. Like, we're one country that's an island. Europe is a conglomeration of so many countries. And lots of those countries, by the way, don't have the economic viability to be able to shut down. Same with parts of Asia. You can't shut Malaysia down.
No, but I'm not talking about Europe and Asia. I'm talking about America.
Yeah, but again, America's a lot bigger than us. You can't just shut America down.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, Sam, is that if there was many other competitions in the world, if you had six players testing positive to COVID,
it's not a good look.
You wouldn't have the rest of your team playing yep. 2 days later.
And a big signing in the A-League, Shane. Western United have signed Victor Sanchez, a Spanish midfielder. He's 33. He played more than 300 times in Serie A, which is Spain's top division. He did have a loan spell, I think, alongside Leo Messi at Barcelona as well. And Casey Stoner, in an interview with a Spanish newspaper, the Australian two-time MotoGP champion, has said his chronic fatigue has him feeling at 50% energy levels most days.
One of the great athletes of our time, especially when it comes to motorsport, Casey Stoner. His dominance at Phillip Island, just unprecedented, going back about a decade.
And don't forget the WBBL final. It's tomorrow night. The Thunder qualified last night. They will take on our Stars. We spoke to Meg Lanning last night. Speaking of Aussies in action, Steve Smith needs 6 for an unbelievable ton. He's 94 from 59 balls. Carey has just come in. He's 5 from 5. Australia 5 for 349, 47.3 overs. I do want to see, though, what India do in the first 10 overs.
Oh, it's going to be fascinating, especially when you have a man by the name of Virat Kohli out there leading India. The one bit of reprieve the Aussies get, they know that he's not going to be there for the bulk of the Test series. But you're right, we so often say we don't know what a batting strip is actually like until the other team's batted on it, but this is a formidable total at the moment, and the Indians don't actually have the greatest of records at the SCG either.
No, they don't, although it does look like a flat track, and they have some stars in that batting lineup as Carey goes over extra cover, off the back foot, punches it for 4. Australia now 5 for 353. Carey 9 from 7. An amazing moment in the last 24 hours, the reception for Diego Maradona in Naples. Of course, the place where he went on and played such a big part of his career outside of Argentina, for Napoli. They lit flares and chanted his name outside San Paolo Stadium as they, being Napoli, played their Europa League match this morning, which they won 2-0, by the way. A beautiful moment.
I mentioned with Paul Wade yesterday that, you know, the Argentines, he's just revered as this figure that transcended sport. But it wasn't just in Argentina.
No, well, the Italians love him.
Yeah, and I think in Australia, you're somewhat removed from that and the power of football and soccer. But to see those scenes and, you know, the 3 days of mourning in Argentina and the scenes, of course, Buenos Aires, quite remarkable for a sportsman.
We'll make that the legendary moment for Bowls Australia. The Bowls Green is just up the road. Local legends are wanted. Search Bowls clubs near me. Just on that, I did. I love looking up old newspaper headlines. Mm. I just find newspapers throughout the years that the headlines in big moments are often so fascinating. And the one in, I forget the name of the newspaper, it'll come to me in a second, in Italy, when he signed for Napoli, was world's most expensive player signs for world's poorest club.
That's good.
Which it was at the time. Yeah. You know, like, Napoli was like, who?
Yeah.
You know, like, what? Why would he go there? Anyway, I like old newspaper headlines. That was it. This is Sports Day for Kia and Red Energy. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Macca's. Macca's 30 days, 30 deals is back. You better download the My Macca's app today. Steve Smith has just hit his 10th one-day international century. And boy, wasn't it a fine one. He's 101 from 63 balls, 10 fours and 4 sixes. Incredibly, Australia 5 for 368 after 49 overs. Smith is on strike facing the last over, the first of which is a dot ball. They wanted 370. They're going to get it.
Third fastest century by an Aussie in one-day international cricket. And remarkable thinking that he scored just 30 runs of his initial 30 deliveries.
Is that right? What, so he's made 70 from 38 balls?
Correct.
It's unbelievable.
Remarkable innings.
And strike rate of 157.
Second century of these innings. I reckon you can guess one of them. Fastest ODI.
I had Gilchrist in my head.
No, one of them's out there at the moment.
Maxwell?
Yeah.
What was his
51 deliveries against Sri Lanka at this venue as well.
Oh, there you go.
Smaller boundaries.
Yep.
Flat wicket. The other one you'll never get.
No, tell me.
James Faulkner.
Oh, overseas.
Yes, in Bangalore.
Yeah, yep.
But against now, India.
Well, there you go. Steve Smith just hit a boundary off the second ball of the last over. Australia 5 for 372. Hey, what did you make of our call that we had earlier?
Joe?
He said, just for those who not listening, he said it was purely a commercial decision that we'll see tennis players come in and not have to fully quarantine. That is, stick in a hotel room for 14 days.
The commerce is a huge part of it. It is a massive event for Victoria. If there was no commercial element, they wouldn't give a stuff about the Australian Open. It is so important to Victoria. It is so important to the businesses affiliated with Tennis Australia and the Australian Open, from merchandising, food and drink, event catering. All those thrive off of the Australian Open. So yes, commerce plays a massive role, but it isn't at the expense of our health and well-being. Mm. And I think that's important to register. The Victorian government doesn't want another lockdown. Tennis Australia doesn't want any endangered. And 99.9% of the tennis players coming out here and their families do not want to endanger anyone in Australia. Now, is it likely that someone will have coronavirus from those that come out? Absolutely there is. However, we need to, and the Victorian government needs to back itself, that the hotel quarantine that is in place is adequate and that the players will be separated enough during their practice to ensure others aren't exposed to COVID-19.
Steve Smith's just been bowled, by the way, on 105 by Mohammed Shami in the last over. Pat Cummins has just come in and hit a single off his first delivery. Yeah, I tend to agree with you. And I also think the thing that gets lost in all of this is that, and I'm not trying to veer too far from sport, but it's up to the processes that the state government puts in place to make sure that if they are training in a bubble, that is, if they are leaving their hotel room, well, get your processes right.
100%.
It's barring a player climbing out the window and abseiling down the wall and then running into the community and spreading the virus around, barring that happening, any spread of the virus will be a mistake from the authorities.
100%. That is why the parameters need to be put in place. And we've had plenty of time to ensure
we have
those parameters are in place since our botched hotel quarantine back in May. But yeah, I know people are saying, oh, well, it's a commercial decision. Of course it is. 100% is.
James Frawley might have made a commercial decision because he was in retirement and now he's going to get paid to play footy for at least another year. He joins the Saints. He was unveiled at Moorabbin today. Obviously, there was part of it was emotion with Danny Frawley and the Frawley name and how he feels there. But there was also a link, and we mentioned Jared Roughead last night. It might have been him that first put the idea in his head.
Yeah, I honestly, I'd plan to probably play at a Vafa side and start trying to work out what I want to do after footy, I guess, for the next 20, 25 years of my life. So, and then I spoke to, had a few beers with Ruffy up in Noosa and just got chatting. And he said, the St Kilda might be keen. And first I heard of it, so I was a bit surprised. And then it pretty much went from there. Rado gave me a call and just been in contact ever since. And here we are now.
He went on to say how much footy he reckons he's got left in him.
Yeah, I felt like I could still compete at the level and play good AFL football. So I think I've got another year or two left in me and play some decent footy. So when they come knocking, I thought, well, it's a pretty good opportunity. Why not? And looked at the list and they've got a pretty exciting list. So it was a no-brainer, really.
It's exciting for St Kilda, I think, that, you know, they bring him in. They've got absolutely nothing to lose by playing him. There certainly wouldn't be significant financial outlay. I think it's a great move for the Saints defensively.
It's a win for Frawley because his career gets to go on, a win for the Saints as well because they get another key back. We'll call that the win-win for Betfair. Gamble responsibly, 1-800-858-858. Brad's in Baxter's giving us a call. G'day, Brad.
G'day there.
Go ahead, Brad.
How about we get some of the other things in Victoria up and going in the arts and some of those areas? You know, people that can't go to work because we haven't been given the opportunity. And you want to bring in the tennis players. You know, bend over backwards for them.
Why can't we do both at the same time, Brad?
Well, let's do both at the same time, but let's talk about it. not just continually talk about the tennis.
Well, we are talking about it.
Yeah, everyone bending over for them, you know, do everything for them.
Well, A, Brad, it's a sports show, so that's why we're primarily focusing on the tennis. B, I'm all for museums opening back up, performances, concerts, getting people back into normal life. It is so important. And on that, we agree that regular life and bringing it back to Victoria is crucial for the morale in this state. And you know what's a big part of normal life in Victoria? The 2 weeks of the Australian Open, where people don't just go to watch the tennis. They go to watch music, they go to have a beer, they go to have a meal. It's all part of the social life that we love here in Melbourne, not only the sporting capital, but the events capital as well. So I think in some ways, Brad, we actually agree.
That's right. Cut us off so we can't say anything.
Brad, we won't
cut
you off
right now, Brad.
You speak as long as you like.
Well, as I said, the arts isn't just the museums and things. There's theatre and all of those things. None of them have been able to get back because they won't tell us how many we can have in a venue.
Yeah, well, Brad, I am a great lover of the arts, and I hope that the theatres get back open as soon as we possibly can. But I don't think that should discourage us from trying to get the Australian Open up and going. It's not just for the tennis players. I think it's for a lot of people, as Shane said, that, you know, probably lovers of sport, lovers of art.
But there are a lot of lovers of the arts as well.
I understand that. But not everything is going to happen at exactly the same time. I think this has been a crazy year.
But we've been over backwards for the football all year and now the tennis. How about we bend over backwards for some of the other things?
It was the Queensland government who bent over backwards for the football, in fairness.
No. Well, you know, we backed the football the whole year. You know, let's make bubbles all over the place and do this and do that.
They were all bubbles.
I don't see it happening for anything else.
All right, Brad. We made bubbles all
Have
over
a great
it.
Night.
Thank you, Brad. Appreciate the call.
Good on you, Brad. No, and we encourage all people that, and there's a lot of frustration around this.
Absolutely, there is. But again, we're coming at it primarily from a sporting point of view, given the nature of the show. And you're right, Sam. It wasn't Victoria that saved the AFL season. It was every other state.
Tommy Hackett from Ladbrokes on the other side of this. Welcome back to Sports Day. We were going to be joined by the Rain Man, Tommy Hackett, but he's decided to start his Friday evening early. It's a nice life for some. Goodness gracious me.
Maybe he found something good to put a wager on, Sam. He's decided to take the night off.
Australia's 6 for 374. So India will need 375 to win. Dave Warner came in and made 69. Aaron Finch, 114. His 17th one-day century. He's now fourth on the list. Steve Smith, 105 from 66 deliveries. Unbelievable. 11 fours, 4 sixes. His 10th one-day century. Stoinis came in and was removed first ball. Not ideal for him. Glenn Maxwell, the big show, then came in and lived up to his name. A quick 545 from 19 balls. 5 fours and 3 sixes. Labuschagne, only 2. Carey came in and made a quick 17 from 13. And Pat Cummins only faced 1 ball for 1.
The best run chase at the SCG is 334 by Australia back in, I think it was 2010 or 2011. India needs 375.
What was the amount that you just said?
311.
Now, I'm going to say, I usually like to be researched before I say things. I'm just going to remember a game, and you tell me the year it was.
Don't bring me down with you if you can't remember.
Good point, but I will. I will. I'll drown you alongside me. Australia made, I reckon, 380 against South Africa. Was it in Durban? And they chased it down. And didn't Herschel Gibbs make like 175 from 100 balls or something like that?
Gee, Sam. I'm not even going to guess a year.
You're usually pretty good with it.
And we're not even sure that you're just pulling this stat from somewhere. You haven't even backed yourself in with your knowledge. It was an incredible innings, though, by Australia this afternoon. Great to see the cricket back. And it all, as we spoke with Darren Lehman about earlier in the evening, bodes incredibly well, not only for the rest of this one-day series, but also for the upcoming Test series, which begins on December 17 against India.
It wasn't even 380. Sorry to cut you off. Australia made 434 and lost.
In a one-day international. Where was that?
2006 in Johannesburg, so I didn't even get the
You threw me with Durban.
Oh, yeah,
of course. That's why I forgot.
Ponting made 164 from 105 balls. Was I right at least about Gibbs? Yes. Oh, my God. He made 175. Didn't I say 175?
Nostradamus over here. Yeah, but you got the city wrong.
21
fours
and 7 sixes.
I would have been able to tell
Imagine
you.
Imagine making 430 and losing.
Yeah, it's pretty rough.
This has been Sports Day for Red
Energy.
It's not
going to be 375 and losing.
Hey, Shane, great fun this week.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun, Sammy. Good to see you.
It's still 33 degrees outside. It's bad news for me.
Get down to Port Melbourne and jump in the bay. Nice little swim.
It's not my scene. Have a good weekend, everyone. Stay well. Stay safe. You are listening to Sports Day on this beautiful Friday evening for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Now, a day of extreme fire danger has been forecast tomorrow across Victoria's Mallee District. A heat health alert has also been issued for the Mallee. You can monitor conditions at emergency.vic.gov.au. Shane, welcome back.
Sam, looking forward to hearing our interview once again in a moment of David Noble. You and I both said off air afterwards just how impressed we were with him as an orator. The way he spoke, what he was looking to achieve at North Melbourne, and I guess to a degree the depth of knowledge he already had about the Kangaroos. Now, sure, as an AFL coach, you've got a knowledge of the entire playing fraternity, but he just seemed to have a good inkling about this group as it currently stands and what he wants to do with it.
Without any further ado, let's go back to our interview with David Noble, his first on Sports Day as the coach of North Melbourne. What kind of coach are you going to be?
A positive one, Sam. I'll be tough. We'll have a high standard and high demand. I think you have to when you want to win games and play in successful finals. But we also, you know, and I include the other coaches in that, that we want to be a coaching group that embraces our players, that listens to our players, helps them get better and continue to strive to be successful.
What do you think the biggest difference is from what you've seen in your time in footy, in different levels, by the way, between the coaches that are able to extract the most ability out of their players versus the ones that, even though they're not trying to, end up alienating themselves and it backfires?
There's two or three things that come to mind. One is the level, I think, of relationship and trust that you build with your group. I think there's an understanding that you need to stick to your plan. You know, you've got to have consistency with your messaging, I think, with a group. If you set a plan, even if the plan's not right, mate, and you've got everybody on board, that actually becomes a strength. And then I think there's some agility that you need to have as a group to be able to grow together, challenge each other, you know, go from sort of simple to sort of that complex area and improve your game plan as you go. So, I mean, ultimately, that the coach makes the decision. I mean, that's what I'm employed to do. I'm employed to coach and win games and play in finals. But, yeah, that's probably the three things that come to mind.
David, congratulations on the role. What made you want this position at North Melbourne? There was a lot of rhetoric once North Melbourne was looking for a new senior coach as to who would want it. Is it a poison chalice? So much work that needs to be done. Sitting back, what made you go, all right, I'm ready to take this challenge on?
It's a really good question, Shane, and I think it was born out of the conversations that I'd had with Ruzzi over that particular weekend to make me reflect, look at inside a bit closer. I think someone that had actually, you know, come to me and said, look, we think you've got some skills that, you know, could suit the role. I sat back and talked to a couple of people that I really trust, and I guess my manner and skill set, even in the management circle, was, you know, about coaching people and wanting to improve them and watch them grow and challenge them. So I'd set a really long goal when I first started, you know, sort of the 15 years I thought was going to take me to get to that level, and it didn't evolve, and I've just continued to grow as an individual. And now I think the cycle and the approach that a senior coach takes on in a club is a slightly different dynamic skill set than what I probably had 10 years ago.
It's a nice coincidence. Chris Fagan goes from general manager of football to a senior coach at the Brisbane Lions, and now his general manager of football becomes a senior coach. What have you learnt from Chris? And not, I shouldn't say his parting words, because obviously you're close mates and he'll have a bit more to say along the journey, but what were his words as you took on this role?
Oh, he was really clear. He was absolutely go for it. You've got my blessing. you know, I ran a couple of things past him in regards to a presentation. I'm thinking about this, and you know, he couldn't have been more helpful. You know, he absolutely no one at the Brisbane Lions wanted me to go, but yeah, he and the club were really supportive. When I sent him a text, and you know, I said I've got it, with a couple of little expletives in there, and he had a chance to jump out of a luncheon and ring me back. He was absolutely thrilled a bit. So, look, it's an interesting one. If you look at both Chris and my history and you have a look at how we've come through, we're two dead set coaches that just moved into admin. You know, if you look at our history and the length of time that we spent in the coaching chair along the way, from TAC Cup to development to VFL reserves, you know, we're both educators and teachers, you know, at heart.
Nobes, you talked today about, you know, wanting North Melbourne members and fans to go to the footy and watch individual players develop.
Yep.
I know you've only been there for 10 seconds, but you would have watched them a fair bit. Who are the sort of ones that excite you, that you're looking forward to seeing grow under your eyes?
Well, I mean, you never like sort of probably pulling a lot of them out, you know, Sammy. It's because you don't want to put them under pressure. But seeing that we're only in November or December,
it couldn't hurt, surely.
No, it's the, you know, I've liked what I've seen from the Larkies and the Zuhas and Taron Thomas.
Yep.
You know, I think there's some upside in Jed Anderson and the way that I remember seeing him play in his junior times. How he's played some really good outside balance area. Simcom, LDU, Curtis Taylor's done a great job this year. I mean, just the list goes on. And I think it's an exciting opportunity to create an environment and a culture where these guys feel it's okay to have engagement with the coaches. It's okay to not get everything right on the training track or in a game, and learn from it and be encouraged to keep going. That is what we need our fans to see when they come through the gate, is to go, I'm going to come and I've got a, you know, Jai Simpkins number on my back, and I'm wearing his jumper, and I'm a Jai Simpkin fan, and I'm going to watch him get better.
Yeah.
It's the members club. We've got to, you know, provide an avenue for our fans to feel engaged, to want to come to games, to watch our guys play. And look, even when we're not going all that well, there'll be some times of that this year, they can actually see what we're trying to do.
The passionate fans are the Arden Street fans. I reckon the shinbone of spirit is something that's polarised a few of them over the last few years, Nobes. You know, that some think it's something that should continue to be embraced. Others think it should be left in the past and let's forge our own path. Where do you sit on it?
Yeah, I got asked that a bit, Sammy, in the lead up to it, and even myself. I think we need to embrace it. It is real. In talking to a lot of the young guys, they gave me that information without even asking. You know, like, what is a shin boner? They are very, very clear that it is an embedded spirit that our past players have committed to this football club and that they need to pay respect to when they go out on the field. Now, we might not have been able to do that in the manner that we've wanted to, but, yeah, I've been extremely impressed with the, you know, the embedded DNA that has in our environment, and I'm tipping it's here to stay. We might need to, you know, give it a poke and make sure that we do pay our respect to it, but certainly it is a real part of the culture here, and maybe we need to give it a bit of a feed, mate, and to let it flourish a little bit more.
Speaking on the pass, would you pick up the phone to Wayne Carey?
Yeah, why not? Absolutely. I want to get an understanding of the cultural aspects of, you know, my new club. You know, I've been lucky enough to sit in a couple of interviews, you know, across from Glenn Archer, a person that I sat back as a football fan and just admired the sheer brutality as to how he's defended, you know, not only his position, but his jumper. You know, I'm now working with John Blakey, you know, premiership player here. So absolutely, I'll be trying to work hard to get an understanding of what our fans have experienced over the last, you know, several, several years.
David, the comments of Ben Buckley have been widely played today about the ambition or the expectation.
Which comments?
In two to three years' time, challenging for the top four, being in a premiership window. Is it ambition or is it expectation from the North Melbourne board?
No, I think it's an ambition. And we talked about that at the meeting I had with the board, Shane. I don't have an issue with the chairman, you know, making it an ambition and a statement. You know, we want to grow our membership as well. We can't do that if we're not winning games and playing finals. We want to continue to broaden our connection with, you know, with Tassie as well. So it's not in my contract as part of my KPIs. So that's, but yeah, I understand and respect the way that, you know, we want to be seen. You know, I talked today that we need to be a reliable team. If we can be reliable, perform, deliver consistent performance, then, you know, who knows what happens. So we're not going to put a ceiling on ourselves. I mean, if we'd have sat back here in 2017 and, you know, we'd said Brisbane Lions are going to finish in the top four in 3 years' time, I mean, or 4 years' time, people would have scoffed at it.
David Noble there. Remember, being prepared for fire could save your life. Download the Vic Emergency app at emergency.vic.gov.au. More Sports Day after this. Welcome back. You're listening to Sports Day on this Friday evening for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. It was a very interesting chat with David Noble, the new coach of North Melbourne, as it was, Shane, earlier in the week with Paul Marsh. A little bit happening with the AFL Players Association.
Yeah, absolutely. Curious to get your thoughts just quickly, Sam, on where you think the AFL will land in terms of quarter length next year. We touched on that with Paul Marsh. And it's something that the AFL is going to, I think, seriously have to consider, whether they go to 18 minutes, but more five-day breaks.
Hang on, let me just... What I'll do is I'm going to start a poll, and then I'm going to travel across the country and ask everyone and ask for their opinion. Then I'm going to go to the players. Then I'll ask Netflix and Amazon. Then I'll ask which one's going to make me the most money, and also which one's going to give me the highest amount of scoring. I mean, seriously, just make a decision. I don't know. 18 minutes? Sounded like it was going to be 18. Then there were reports it was going back to 20. Like, to be honest, I have no faith in...
So you think the difference between 18 and 20 is negligible?
I think go back to the way the game was, which was 20 plus time on.
I agree with that, but then you can't have as many five-day breaks.
Yes, you can.
Can you?
You have players with three-day breaks. No, I'm so over the whole break thing. Just go back to the way the game was.
Let's have a listen to what Paul Marsh...
I should have said that to Paul earlier in the week.
Had to say, fair to say, Sam was a little bit more polite during the interview itself.
The boss of the Players Association, Paul Marsh. Paul, well done on the negotiations. Tell me if I'm wrong by saying that this looks like a pretty good outcome for all parties.
Yeah, g'day, Sam and Shane. I think it's a good, fair deal. We're certainly happy with where it's landed, you know, given the circumstances and the environment that we're in at the moment. So, you know, painless is maybe not the right word. I think it's been a really difficult process that we've worked through. But as we do tend to do, we try to play it out behind closed doors. And it was certainly done in a respectful way. And, you know, I think we and the AFL are both comfortable with where it's landed. So a good result.
What was the hardest part in selling this to your players? I know early days it was about getting clarity from the AFL as to what the next couple of years they thought would look like financially. What did you find the most difficult part of these negotiations?
There's a different dynamic than normal in that, you know, we're obviously, we're negotiating a cut, whereas normally what we're trying to do is, you know, the game has had, you know, good health for a number of years, and it's been about, okay, well, what does the increase look like? So that's been difficult. But I think, you know, just getting the information, we've had lots of meetings with players, getting them to understand the situation. I think the most difficult part was just landing the deal. But I think the players got their heads around it, you know, that everyone else out in society is suffering at the moment. And, you know, there was some pain to be shared here. But also I think one thing that softened the blow is that if the industry does better than it's forecasting, the players will share in that. And I think that's a really important part of the model that we've landed.
Paul, obviously players have to take a sacrifice in salary, but some players have to almost sacrifice their careers because of the small list sizes. Obviously some clubs are trying to manipulate it and drop players down to the rookie list. However, some players have simply been delisted. Would you be hopeful that even within 12 months, list sizes are back to what they are traditionally?
Oh, I think I've said this many times. I don't think our job is to maximise the number of jobs in the industry. I think it's to get the right number. And there's been there's a conversation going on around list sizes, you know, well before COVID hit. Mm. So, you know, I think the industry, a lot of people in the industry think a bigger cut was needed. Our view was there wasn't a very strong case for that. But a lot of players think, you know, smaller list size numbers is where we should get to. So I don't necessarily think that we'll be going back. I think this has been a small but sensible change. And look, it is a tough time of the year. There are players that lose their jobs at this time of the year every year, and this year is no different. But I think where we landed again is another fair component of this deal.
Paul, what was the feedback on season 2020 from a player's point of view? I'm talking about the game itself, including shorter breaks between matches, shorter quarters. Was there a general positivity around the game, or was there a feeling amongst your constituents that we just want the game to return to how it was? 20-minute quarters, our minimum 6-day break. What was the general consensus?
Yeah, really mixed. It's a good question. I think really mixed views from players. I think if, you know, putting it all in the mix, I think, you know, what I would say is that you know, the players that from teams that had really good seasons were very grateful for the, you know, their fellow players for allowing them to get through this season. I think the young players, by and large, just enjoyed the ride this year. I think once teams, it became obvious that they weren't going to make the finals, it became more difficult for them. Players with families, it became more difficult. But I think the players took a really open-minded view of, you know, everything that was put in front of them this year. I don't necessarily think that, you know, we would just embrace all the things that we did this year again. But I think the reality of it was that, you know, we spoke to them at length right from the start of this to say, look, we need you to be flexible. We need you to be open-minded. Mm-hmm. There was a real risk that we wouldn't get through this season at various stages. So I think, like, full credit to the players for just taking that mindset, because, you know, it is human nature to want to say, well, I don't want to do all this. I want it to be the same. But this year, I just don't think we could afford for that to be the case. So, you know, there'll be some good discussion, I'm sure, with the AFL and the clubs and us around, okay, what should we take forward from this year? What are the things that we just did because we needed to get through the year? And I think there'll be a number of things in both camps there.
What's the feeling around more 5-day breaks in season 2021? We still await the fixture. The reason I ask is that as a commentator this year, you'd see these teams back up and back up, and it didn't seem to, on the front of it, have a huge impact on the players. They seem to be backing up pretty well. Is that too much of a simplistic view, or do you think that maybe players did back up better from 5-day breaks than expected, and we could see more of them this year?
Yeah, I mean, there's probably a few aspects to this. I think, you know, firstly, we did actually have a small number of 5-day breaks before this season, so that was something that we'd agreed with the AFL for season 2019. Mm. I think it just gets a little bit more difficult once you throw in travel into the mix. I think the length of the game this year was a bit more conducive to 5-day breaks. I think it's something that we will certainly talk to the AFL about. Our biggest concern for the players is the risk of injury, and sure, I think that's something that we need to take seriously. So I don't think necessarily we should just be moving headlong into a whole lot more 5-day breaks. But I think if the circumstances are right and, you know, potentially there's no travel involved, then it's certainly something we would be open to. But I don't think we'll get to a point where, you know, week in, week out, we're working off 5-day breaks.
We're speaking to Paul Marsh on Sports Day as we approach 6:30. Sam McClure and Shane McGinnis with you. He's the boss of the AFL Players Association. Paul, just a bit more broadly, more rule changes for next year. I know nothing significant at this stage, but the AFL has made it very clear that they want higher scoring. They want the game to be more entertaining. And I feel like this is a message that is only getting louder from the AFL. Do you ever get concerned as a players union boss that your constituents are being made to be more entertainers and less footballers than they were, say, 10 years ago?
Oh, not so much. I mean, I think that they're both, you know. I think we have to accept that they are out there to entertain. I think, but the players aren't setting the strategy of how their game plans work from club to club. I mean, that sits with the coaches. And I think, you know, the AFL is obviously trying to counteract some of the strategies that the coaches are laying out. And
the players will, you know, that they'll adopt to whatever game plan is put in front of them and try to play to it. So I think it's not a huge talking point with us, you know, what each of the club strategies might be. But, you know, players by and large don't love rule changes, and I think it can get confusing. It can get confusing for the fans and the umpires. And so consistency is usually their starting point with these sort of things. But I think we all have to be open-minded enough to think, well, if we can improve the game, we should always be looking to do that. Mm. So, look, I think that's probably the way that they will attack this type of issue as we go forward.
Paul Marsh there for Australian Made. I've calmed down a bit. Shop for authentic Aussie products. Choose Australian Made. And make sure you watch The Crown, a brand new digital harness racing show, Thursday nights. It's via the SEN app. This is Sports Day. Shane and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Sports Day. It's all for Wilson Holmes. Shane, the TAB Melbourne Cup, it is tonight. It jumps at 8:10. It is going to be a big, big night out there. And we've got Molly Haynes from Greyhound Racing Victoria on with us. Molly, tell us about the night, and in particular the Melbourne Cup, which jumps at 8:10.
Well, thanks very much for having me, guys. And look, the Melbourne Cup is the greatest greyhound race of all time, and I'm not just saying that because I'm Victorian and because I'm here tonight at Sandown Park. It is just full of talent coming out of every single box, but there's a greyhound who is very special. He's going to be history-making, and his name's Simon Told-Helen, also known as the Nose. He's the favourite in this Melbourne Cup field. He's jumping from box number two. He's just a phenomenal creature. But what is made even better about Simon Told-Helen is the fact that he's owned by a group of Geelong-based doctors. And they're actually, I know, doctors of all people. They're also they're lucky enough to be on course here tonight too. So it's going to be absolutely fantastic. So hopefully the Nose pulls off a Melbourne
Cup. Why do they call him the Nose, Molly?
Because he's got a Roman nose. Now, for anyone who doesn't know a greyhound, they've got quite a sleek, straight, beautiful nose, as if they've been, you know, manicured very perfectly. But, Simon Told-Helen has a rounded nose. So it looks like there's a little hump on the top of his nose. So he's a very interesting-looking creature.
Now, Molly, it's fair to say, though, a West Aussie greyhound is going to be out to spoil the party tonight.
Look, we're all hoping that he will. Tommy Shelby, he is an absolute champ of the West. And what is making things even better about Tommy Shelby is the fact that 5% of all prize money earned throughout November is going to Movember.
Nice.
So that means if he wins tonight, that's over $21,000 to Movember. They've already raised about $7,000 so far. So it's a fantastic achievement by both dog and owners.
Good on you, Molly. The TAB Melbourne Cup tonight, it jumps at 8:10. It's going to be huge. You can see it all on 7.2 and then the Thrill of the Chase as well, hosted by Jack Heverin, 10 o'clock Sunday morning on 7.2. We are not far away from our final segment of the week, Shane, which means that I have to go back out into 35 degree heat.
It's been a very warm day, it's fair to say, Sam.
Can I tell you a story?
Here we go.
I tell you this because I know she's not listening. Which
how many cans of sunscreen did you go through today?
No, I put it on once. Don't be like that. Today, this is not one word of a lie, right? Not that I ever lie. It's about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, so like it was, I don't know, high 20s.
Yeah.
The sun was just starting to peak in it.
Yeah, it had a bit of kick sting to it. Yeah.
And I was sitting in the living room. The air conditioning hadn't gone on yet because, you know, I was just trying to be, you know, electricity conscious. And suddenly the front door opened. Nisha, my partner, works in the office at the front of the house.
Right.
And the front door opened and she walked outside. Said, what are you doing? She said, I'm cold. I'm just getting some sun. She was cold. Now, granted, I'm the whitest person possibly on the continent and she has Indian heritage, so she feels the cold. Like I feel the heat.
You'd be one of those people.
I felt sick.
That you're in bed, you don't have any doona, and you just want the air conditioner on.
Yeah.
And she'd be on the other side of the bed.
Shivering.
Yeah,
that's right.
Exactly.
And I've also got the fan set
up
next to the bed.
That's a problem.
So you got the air conditioning coming in.
Yeah.
And then the fan blows it straight into your face.
And she's constantly saying, Sam, turn it off, I'm cold.
Pretty much.
Yeah. That's a happy relationship.
I tell you who's got a happy relationship. Maxi Klinger and the Melbourne Renegades. I reckon they're going to be good this year.
Yeah, so do I. I think it's going to be tough the first few.
Do you think they'll be better than the Stars?
Looking at their lineup, yes.
Same.
Yes, I do. And they are very comfortable at Marvel Stadium.
We're not far away from the BBL starting. Is it BBL 10, am I right
to
say?
Yeah, correct. December 10, I think.
Michael Klinger, better known as Maxi, is the coach of the Gades, and he joined us earlier in the week.
Yeah, good evening, guys. How are you going?
Really well. It's been a bit of a bizarre build-up, I guess, not initially knowing the fixture, but a bit of certainty given to the club today with the release of the second half of the year, and great to see the Renegades back hosting games at Marvel Stadium.
Yeah, the last couple of weeks, things are becoming a little bit clearer. So, yeah, it was awesome to see. You know, we got five games in Melbourne, three at Marvel Stadium in front of our fans, hopefully, and members. We'll be able to get some people in there and obviously a couple of the MCG. So I think just in general, it's just great to see sport back in Melbourne and hopefully the public come out and support it.
It's such a big part of the Big Bash, the crowd and the atmosphere, especially amongst all the big hitting. Were there concerns even a couple of months ago as to what this season might look like and in terms of, I guess, recruiting players to be part of the Renegades?
Yeah, I wouldn't say concerns because I think it was just the way of life a couple of months ago. You know, you're watching the IPL, which has been on over the last couple of months with no crowds in Dubai. So I think this has almost become a bit of a bonus now. Obviously, you know, that Australia's done a fantastic job to get the COVID situation where it is, to be able to allow us to have some people at the games, which is great for the players, but also great for, you know, for members of the clubs and all the supporters. So in terms of the recruiting the overseas players, it's certainly been a lot more challenging than other years because there's just so much to take into account. Families of the players aren't able to come over because obviously they can't get into the country at the moment. You've got the 14-day quarantine. So there's a lot of things that put some of the... I'm actually really pleased to see such high-quality overseas players here this season. Now, with each team allowing three, I think it's going to be great for the tournament. And seeing some of the signings over the last, you know, month or so, it looks like it's going to be almost the best contingent of overseas players so far.
Michael, talk us through your squad, if you can, and why Renegades fans should be excited. You must be happy with how it's taken shape. Finch at one end and Pattinson leading the other.
Yeah, I mean, James Pattinson, we're probably not going to have until the last sort of week or two of the tournament, and hopefully finals, obviously. But Finch, you know, having Finchie and Kane Richardson, you know, two of the best one-day cricketers in the country, one with the bat, one with the ball, available for the whole season is huge for us. Obviously, most seasons they're only available generally the first half before the one-day and T20 international start. So the way the fixtures are with Cricket Australia this year, with the white ball stuff happening before the Big Bash, it allows, you know, some of the best white ball stars in Australia to play a full tournament. So that's something I'm really excited about and only going to strengthen our team. The other thing is we've got some really great Victorian talent. I think 10 or 11 of our squad are Victorian-based players, which is something that we've obviously done deliberately and strategised for. We've got some exciting young guys, Jake Fraser-McGurk, Mackenzie Harvey, two guys who were in the Australian World Cup team last year who weren't able to for us at all because of that. And Mitch Perry, Zach Evans. So it's a couple of real good young players, not only in Victoria, but in all of Australia. So you mix them with, you know, the senior guys I mentioned and your Sean Marshes and Sam Harper coming off two really good seasons. And I could go on, but I think it's a real good blend, I suppose, of youth and experience there.
Maxi Klinger there. Good luck to the Renegades. More Sports Day still to come for Wilson Holmes. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're coming up towards 8 o'clock, which means we get to go home and enjoy the weekend, Shane. It's all for Wilson Holmes.
It's going to be a nice weekend too, Sam. It's hot today, but it's going to be a nice weekend.
What's the temperature tomorrow?
28.
Oh, see. No.
Tomorrow? No, that's nice.
What about Sunday?
That's beach weather. I think it cools down.
Beach weather? What, look at me.
28.
I'm not going to the beach.
Tonight. You can even go in the evening time, Samuel.
I need to get a wetsuit. That's what I need.
It's 28, not minus 28.
No, but the wetsuit means I can't get burnt.
Just wear a rashy vest, a rashy top.
A rash vest. That'll go down well.
I still wear a rash vest.
You do not.
I do.
Why?
Because it keeps the sun off you. The wetsuit is too hot.
You are outrageous.
You see me in my rash vest and my boardies at the weekend? Say hi.
I will go the other way and pretend I don't know you.
How's that different to usual?
No, same thing. Probably favourite interview of the week was that of Thanasi Kokkinakis.
It was good.
He's on the comeback trail, and I think there's big things ahead for this 24-year-old. I can't believe he's only 24. Yeah. He's going to get a wild card, you'd think, unless something strange happens at the Australian Open, whenever that tournament is played. And he caught up with us from South Yarra in Melbourne earlier in the week.
Pleasure, guys. How are we?
We're good. We'll get to the strange circumstances surrounding the Australian Open, but we've heard a little bit about what's happened the last 12 months and glandular fever and getting back from injury. Tell us, Thanasi, how you are right now in your preparation.
Yeah, I'm doing really good, guys. Yeah, it's obviously been a grim year, but for me at the moment, it's given me time to build up, and yeah, my body's in as good as a spot as it probably has been in a long time. So played a couple sort of smaller professional tournaments here in Melbourne, and played 8 matches in 9 days, and yeah, went well, won every match. So I know it's not sort of the end competition, but for me to come off a 14-month layoff and play 8 matches in 9 days, which I don't think I've done that since I was about 14, it's a good feeling.
How bad did it get with that layoff?
Yeah, it was pretty grim. Start of the year wasn't good. The frustrating thing was I did my full pre-season as well going into the summer, and I actually felt pretty good. And then, yeah, the last couple of days, my throat was really sore. I couldn't really breathe on court. I wasn't sure if it was to do with the bushfire smoke that was all around Australia. Yeah, but then, yeah, I just didn't feel good on court. Then I got some tests done and found out I had glandular fever. So, yeah, lost a lot of weight, had no energy, but yeah, this year's been kind of a strange one, but I've been able to get myself back together and in a good spot now.
You look at other players on the tour, Thanasi, especially from an Australian point of view, and many have chosen not to travel this year. No doubt you've spoken with a number of them. Do you feel like you've missed out in 2020, or do you feel that if there was ever to be a year to get over injuries, this was the year to do it?
Yeah, out of all the years I've missed, I don't regret missing 2020, that's for sure. Speaking to a few guys, I had the opportunity to go and play French Open qualifying and kind of get myself back on track there. But I thought with my sort of weakened immune system and everything going on in the world, it probably wasn't the smartest idea. I didn't feel like I needed to rush back for anything. I thought it'd be a real short-term thinking if I went overseas. And two, I didn't want to potentially catch it and have my body in jeopardy coming into next year. So definitely happy with the decision that I made this year to kind of hang back and train here. Also, if I got it over there, I would have had to do 2 weeks quarantine there in Europe and then 2 weeks back here. So that's a month in a hotel room, and that would have really kind of stalled my progress. So, yeah, didn't want to do that.
So, depending on who you believe at the moment in the media, we're roughly 2 months out from the start of the Australian Open. How is your body feeling at the moment and your fitness in terms of being prepared for a Grand Slam?
Yeah, it's good. I feel good. I've had no real setbacks. Obviously, playing 8 matches in 9 days the last couple of weeks from not playing any tournaments through the whole year is definitely a challenge, and you're going to feel little niggles here and there, but that's expected. The challenge for me is kind of separating the niggles to when it's actually a serious injury, but I think I don't have any of those right now, and I'm feeling good, and it's been steady progress all year for me, really, on the practice court. So I'm going to be ready come a month, 2 months time, whenever it will be. I'll be ready. It's good. I've still got a little bit of time to get myself in shape and or in better shape. And I'm going to be using that wisely.
This is good news. We're all touching wood and crossing fingers and toes for you as you head into the Aussie Open. So we know your rankings obviously slid because of what's happened in the last 15 months to your body and what happened with glandular. Your career high ranking of 69, I think. Will you need a wild card to play in the Aussie Open?
Yeah, I will need a wild card. Unless, obviously, they put me in qualifying and my ranking will kind of put me in there regardless. Now, I don't know what's going to happen with qualifying or not, but the last time they gave me a wild card was US Open sort of last year. I won my first round, then got injured before playing Nadal. So I didn't end up playing him, unfortunately. But I think when I have been rewarded with opportunities, I've shown my level and what I'm capable of. For me, it's just about getting my body in a good place so I can play sort of week after week, tournament after tournament. And yeah, you mentioned my career high in 2015, and I just turned 19 that year, so I came onto the scene sort of pretty young.
Yeah.
I feel like I've missed in between. And it's not, I think I'm a lot better player now than I was then. The only difference was then I was able to put even close or three quarters of a year together, and that's what it's all about. So it's just about continuity with me, and that's what I'm going to be striving for this year.
I think a lot of people forget that you were 19 and that you're only 24, so you're still very, very young. You're probably not thinking about this sort of stuff. You're just concentrating on your body. But, you know, given all the uncertainty with the Aussie Open and whether people will have to quarantine in a hotel room and then come out and play like John Millman's doing in Sydney at the moment, or whether they'll be able to train in a bubble. It must be nice not knowing that you're going to have to do that and, you know, just concentrating on yourself and your body and your form.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I don't think for any international players, if they're not able to train for 2 weeks and they expect them to play high-level tournaments straight after that, I don't think too many will sign up for that. So I think if they can come from overseas and have a training environment or a training bubble where they're still able to be active, I think a lot of people would be keen for that. But yeah, for me, you know, I just got to kind of wait and see how it plays out. I know Craig and the government, everyone's working really hard to put on this event or these few events we're going to have here. It's such a good time of the year and so good for the Melbourne public to get out. Obviously, it's going to be a little different this year. But yes, as I said, I can't really control that too much. For me, I just got to kind of get my body right and stay the course. And then when my time comes, I've got to be ready.
Tanasi, a moment ago, Sam mentioned John Millman. Is he someone whose record that you look to and you go, hold on, he really thrived in his late 20s? I think his highest ranking was around 33, which he achieved when he was 29. Does that give you the hope that, hey, I'm only 24? Yes, I've had injuries, but there's plenty of time still for some success along the way.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Johnny's a good example of that. He maybe wasn't the most talented sort of junior coming up or didn't have the results straight away. But he was able to keep chipping away, keep kicking along. And then, as you can see, he's probably in the prime of his fitness career now, sort of early 30s, late 20s, and he's playing his best tennis. So I think the thing that's been frustrating for me, but I've got to realise, is that everyone has different paths and different journeys. It's been frustrating for me to see guys who, A, I think I'm better than or was coming up with, go on and have really successful careers. So that's been frustrating to me, but also motivating knowing that, hang on, I can match it with these guys and then some. So I just got to focus on myself, get myself right, and then hopefully those opportunities will come.
Is there anyone in particular that you feel you're better than and are ready to hit the court against and just show your powers?
I'm not going to name any names, but I think I've proven when I have been healthy, some of the names I've beaten, it shows what I'm capable of. So, it's just that those guys can do that more often and more consistently. So, I've got to get my body in a space where I can do that and give myself a chance. Maybe it won't happen all straight away for me quickly, but you know that's the beauty of tennis. It's not the Olympics where you don't have every 4 years to kind of shine. You have another chance every week. So, and that's what the top guys do. They just play consistently, and you get better by just simply playing matches. You can do all the training you want, but you've got to test yourself against the best, and that's what I hope to do.
As we let you go, Tanasi, I know you spend most of your time training in Melbourne. Are you a homeowner or are you still sort of navigating your way through the rental market that is frustrating a lot of Melburnians?
I'm navigating my way through the market. I'm a split owner with my siblings of a house in Adelaide. But we are, kind of all spread out at the moment and, just trying to find the right time, right moment, right place, that sort of thing.
Well, we know where the prize money's going to go, Shane.
I was about to say $4.12 million for winning the Australian Open. That'll give you a nice head start, Tanasi.
That will. I don't know if I'll put that all in a house. But I'll tell you what, in Melbourne, that's probably not getting me too much. It's so tough here. But, that's a long way ahead. But, I'm just focusing on the practice court. Hopefully the dollars and everything like that will come.
Tanasi, it's great to hear you fit and healthy. We're all looking forward to seeing you on the court whenever that is. Good luck in the Australian Open.
Appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
Tanasi Kokkinakis there for Giant Bicycles. We are still riding with you. Another big week done, Shane, for Sports Day on Wilson Homes.
Yeah, it's been fun, Sam. Plenty going around. Nice to see cricket finally underway. It's going to be a fascinating one-day series as we venture into the first test starting in mid-December.
Are you off next week? Are you taking another holiday? You just have
just rotating the strike, and I think Matty Granlin and Bruce Seaver are doing the next couple of weeks, and I'll be back around Christmas.
Revolving chair.
Yeah,
it's hard to keep up.
Everyone wants to work alongside you. We have to share the love.
That's unsurprising, really. That's unsurprising. Thanks for joining us this week. We'll be back on Monday from 6.